Welcome to Who's Talking. It's D.G. Martin, and I've got a great guest for you. People have been waiting for Larry Miller to come back and tell us about his time in Chapel Hill, and now he's done it through a great book, and he's agreed to come talk to us about the book and about his great career. And the guy who helped put together the book with his wife, Stephen Demarest, is here to comment on our conversation, Larry. And then we ran into a guy who runs this station named Art Chansky, and he's agreed to sit in with us and jump in as appropriate. But Larry Miller, welcome to Chapel Hill.
Pleasure to be here.
And thanks for bringing this book, which is a product of your knowledge and of Stephen's great writing skills. Let's talk a little bit about what everybody in Chapel Hill would like to hear you relate, and that is, tell us about the late 60s of Tar Heel basketball from your perspective.
Oh, it was a wonderful time for me. The decision to come here was, quite a difficult one, but when I did finally make it, it turned out to be the correct one. But it wasn't easy approaching it because the Tar Heels weren't, as fluid as they are now as far as the program at that time. And coming in, which when I was being recruited, I heard these names from players from all over the place, and it sounded like it was a good deal. We were ranked pretty high recruiting-wise. But then when you get here, things aren't always what they seem to be. So some of it, like Duke had seven high school All-Americas. We had about five, but Duke's seven were actually, seven that played, all of them played, and they were all good athletes. Ours weren't exactly as good as that. And then to top that, Carolina was on probation prior to us coming in, and there was Billy Cunningham, of course, and Bobby Lewis, but then there wasn't a lot after that as far as talent goes. So, and then when you get on a big-time level like UNC, you need a lot of talent. You need a lot more than just two or three guys. And so we found that out, that we were going to have a lot more players if we were going to make a national, impression. So the first couple years were tough, even though I loved the freshman year. I would have rather played varsity, but we had to play freshman ball at the time. And we had good freshman team.
Who was playing with you on the freshman team?
On my freshman
team. Yeah, on your freshman
team. Was Greg Campbell, Shackelford. Charles Shackelford, but it was mm-hmm. a Shackelford from Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Dixon Gribble, you probably wouldn't remember any of the names.
Yeah.
But
well, who did you play? What, we just must play ACC?
ACC. And actually, we beat Duke with seven All-Americas. We actually beat them over there. We won the title. But we'd play junior colleges when the varsity went off to, let's say, play a Big Ten team or somewhere in the Midwest. We would play one of the junior colleges or somebody else's junior varsity team. So we had a full schedule.
Well, did you feel like you would come to college, or was this sort of a transition?
It was kind of like a junior college at that time.
So you beat Duke. What about the other teams? I mean, I went to Davidson, so at that point, Lefty had, I think the freshman teams were playing each other.
Yeah, we might have played them. I can't recall exactly. But
So you've got this perspective. You're looking ahead at the varsity team, and you're watching them play and what are you thinking? I'm going to be joining a group of stars, or I'm going to have to get some people to help if we're going to be.
That was the thought. We got to get somebody to help, and there was concurrence not only in my part but Bobby Lewis's part and the other players that we needed to get help in here, because it just wasn't going to work.
How did you get that help?
Well, we started recruiting.
You weren't recruiting.
No,
were you?
But we helped in that process. And Dean was a smart man. He knew we needed help too. He knew we weren't going to win by ourselves, you know.
Well, it helped him, I guess, to say, look at my freshman team. Look at this great guy from Pennsylvania that we recruited.
Yeah, that's one guy.
You're going to have an opportunity to play with him.
Right. But the numbers didn't stack up. It wouldn't have worked, but just, you know, me coming up every year. I have a feeling that Billy and Bobby and I might have won. You know, we could have won with some other guy, you know, some help there. Because we were a really athletic three guys, you know, all could jump and rebound and score. But during the long haul, we're going to have some, you know, deep help.
So you, Art Chansky's got a question.
Yeah, you know, I don't want Mills to sell himself short here because the recruitment was very, you had to be a person of a great confidence like Larry Miller because he knew what Duke had versus he knew what Carolina didn't have but could have if he came there. And I had great stories, a couple of them I remember you telling me years ago that Big Boob was pulled out at scholarship at the Holiday Inn in Allentown, I guess, and put it right on the table with a pen and wanted you to sign it, and you had to leave with tears in your eyes because you hadn't really decided yet.
I didn't. You're right. And I really couldn't tell him either when I did decide it. And the thing about that day when I did decide, I woke up that morning and didn't know where I was going to go.
And you told Dean and Vic Bubas that school I was going to, I was going to invite that coach to your high school graduation.
Correct.
And you'd call him that morning, right?
Right.
That's a great story.
And you hear the stories about parents, you know, pushing their kids, you know, to go certain places and stuff like that. Mine were totally opposite. I asked him the morning I woke up, I said, well, what do you think? You know, and well, what do you mean, Larry? Well, I got to make a decision tonight where I'm going to go. What do you think? Well, we like both of them. You know that. Well, I mean, where would you like me to go? You know? Oh, well, you know, it's your decision, Larry. You're going to have to live with it. All right. Well, which coach do you like? Well, we like them both. You know that. I mean, they wouldn't get off the chair at all to tell me anything. So when I finally did make the decision, I told them, you know, I was going to invite that coach. But I couldn't tell the other one no. You know, my mother did all the dirty work for me. But to that effect, he sent me a letter after that, and I couldn't open it until after I got out of Carolina because I felt that much, you know, toward him.
Yeah, and talk about Ken Roseman because he was Dean's assistant at the time. He was the freshman coach. And you would come down and visit, and then he would come down and visit, and he would sit on the front porch with your old man drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah.
And he said, what was the famous thing he said about going to Carolina versus going to the Duke? If you came to Duke, you'd come all this way, and what? You'd still be what?
Partying at Carolina.
Yeah, you'd still be 5 minutes away from heaven in Chapel Hill.
Right.
So my point was that he had to be a person tremendously confident at 17 or 18 years old to turn down the program that had been to three Final Fours already in Duke with Bubas to come to a place where he had the confidence that if he came, he could help build it. And Dean knew that. Dean knew that he had to get more plays, but he had to get someone to help him. Yeah. So then when Charlie Scott came to visit the next year, Larry Miller and the guys and Grubar.
Well, Art, excuse me for interrupting. You think if Larry hadn't been here, and that Coach Smith might not have been able to persuade Charlie to come here. I mean,
no question. I mean, there were several points in Dean's career, the hanging in effigy in '65, and there were several points where he was at the crossroads of his career, and you know he does say that the Rusty Clark, Bill Bunning, Joe Brown, Dick Grubar, Gerald Tuttle class was one because that gave them the size and he could move Larry into his
and
natural
position. And the versatility,
yeah. Yeah, and Lewis, you know. And so, I mean, it was the pieces coming together, but they were kind of all kind of fragmented out there and they had to come together to
right.
start this Carolina
all
thing.
Of them had to come together.
Larry, did you have a sense like Art said, did you have a sense that you were a key as you're making the decision to come here? And did, if so, did that have an impact on your saying, well, I'm not going to go to Duke where they've already got it together. I'd like to be at a place where I bring it together.
Well, I have to admit that came to my mind. But until I got here personally and played with the guys, I didn't have that total concept. Because you don't really know until you get on the court with somebody. Like Ian Morrison was, scoring all those points. Well, he didn't know he wasn't going to,
come up short. That was about it, right?
Yeah. And that's – a lot of players were like that, one-dimensional, and, they fade out. So you don't know that until you get on the court. So I did have a feeling about that, but wasn't positive until I got here.
Well, if you joined us late, this is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with Larry Miller, and a wonderful friend Art Chansky is helping because he's got a memory that stretches way back. Mm-hmm. And the author of a book which we're trying to talk about and promote, Steve Demarest, is the great author of a great book, Larry Miller Time, the story of the lost legend who sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. All of us will be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Who's Talking. If you did join us late, I'm having the privilege of talking with Larry Miller, one of the greatest of the great Tar Heel basketball players of all time. He's been telling us how he happened to get to Chapel Hill, and we're beginning to talk about some of the times that he's playing. And to help me stay on track, we've got Stephen Demarest, who is the author of the brand new book about Larry Miller's life, career at Chapel Hill and in the pros and afterwards, a wonderful book called Larry Miller Time, the story of the last of the lost legend who sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. Art Chansky, thanks for helping with this. This is great to have you here. Larry, what about this subtitle? How does that make you feel? The lost legend. Are you the lost legend?
Apparently not now.
We were talking a little bit about the your beginnings here on the freshman team. When did you start to think, we're going to be champs? We're going to be great.
Oh, not until we got Charlie and Dickie and them United class coming in there. And even when we recruited them, then again, you're still not sure. But I mean, let me roll back a little bit. Charlie was late the next year, but when we got Dickie and that class in there, But you don't know when they're again on campus. You got a 6'7" guy almost, 6'11". They beat us as freshmen. They came on as freshman team the year before. That's all well and good, but that was just a practice game. But then when we got together with them, you could tell that they had some quality about them. That was such a good group of guys, good personality, good people, and a lot of talent in there.
In the book, you write about the social life, how the social life of the team and the campus was changing when Charlie came on board. There was apparently overwhelming acceptance of him on the team and generally, but it just wasn't. You all write about that challenge of keeping Charlie happy.
Yeah, well, I was never subject to that kind of thing up north, and I didn't realize when I got down here that they actually had segregated coffee shops and stuff like that, which Dean helped, desegregate, I guess. So I didn't know that. We had a black freshman player named Willie Cooper on our team, although he didn't play varsity, but he was, a black player. So I was okay with that. And then when we recruited Charlie, then it became an issue because there was never a really great black player, in the league at that time. So we promised Charlie when we brought him here that we'd help him, any way we could, especially socially, if that became a problem. It was never a problem on the team. with him. We had issues on the road, of course, but most of those were just temporary and from idiots. And, you know, when we went to play a game on the road or something like that. But we always looked out for and made sure, you know, he was comfortable. And what he did, we told him afterward he could come, you know, party or be with us after games and that, but he had his own social life. So, you know, we accepted that. But I think to this day, he enjoyed his time here. And I think he made the right decision, too.
The in that time when you at this point when you got Charlie and you got these other guys, when did you start thinking you were really really seriously thinking that you're going to be a national championship team?
Start of the season, you know, the first.
Yeah, but everybody sort of says we can be.
I know, but I mean, we judging by the talent, I knew we could because you know I knew what I could do, and I knew what. Judging what Charlie did against me, I knew what he could do. And playing against Bill and Rusty and Dickie and that, I knew what they could do. So,
talk a little bit about Coach Smith. As Coach Smith, I guess he was quiet, had his cards to his vest, but could you tell that he knew that you guys were going to be able to compete for the championship?
I don't think he knew as much as we knew we could.
Oh, why do you say that?
Well, I just, you know, he was that kind of person. You know, he was... cautiously optimistic, you know, as we were gung-ho optimistic. In other words, going by the national title game, you know, he wanted us to slow down against them, and to a T, each one of us said, no, we want to play them heads on, mm-hmm. you know, heads on.
There are great stories about one of the that Stephen has put together with you about the time when you went up to play Kentucky. Do you remember that?
I know where this is going.
It was junior year.
I always say we play hard. You know, we play and win the basketball game, play hard, and then we kind of play hard afterward. You know.
Well, tell me first about the game. Do you remember about the game or only about the party?
No, I remember about the game because we played, you know, 8-0 for up and Pat Riley and Louis Dampier, and they were preseason ranked number one, and we went down there and we won on the road, and I can remember Adolf coming up to me afterward. He said, "Well, Larry, you did a great job," and stuff like that. So that was, you know, memorable to me.
Had recruited you?
Yes, he had. But Rupp was, yeah, he did.
Not a close call though. You didn't think.
No, I didn't.
So you beat the number one team, and then you go home and go to bed, I guess, and get a good night's sleep.
Right. afterward, I already had. The guys were amazed because I already had some ladies picked out, and everything was set up in the room, ready for a party, and.
So this is in the hotel where you guys are staying?
Yeah, exactly.
And where do the girls come from, and what's your secret to being able to?
I don't know. I just went out that day. I scouted, did my scouting just like every good recruiter would, and come up with several good-looking women. And we partied that night.
So these are
co-eds.
Kentucky co-eds.
Right.
And so what's your line? You see, you're a good-looking guy, so it's not all that hard, but you – what do you say? Did you say we're playing tonight, and afterwards we're gonna have a party? Would you like to come or something? I mean, is it
kind of like
simple?
That? Yeah, I kind of like that. I might have sugarcoated a little bit more than that, but anyway, we partied hard, and some of the guys couldn't handle the party mix, and so anyway, the noise got out of hand.
did the coach stay behind his closed door?
Pretty much. Sleeping. Larry Brown came down and tried to quiet us down, but Rusty, in his big stature, told him to move on.
But that really did change Dean's philosophy about staying.
Yes,
staying in Lexington after the game. From that point on,
that
guys
other
on
place,
the bus and the plane and went home right after the game.
He used to leave. He had tried to leave, and that one time, I got some beers and took him on the bus too.
That was the Virginia game. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they stopped to have lunch on Charlottesville, and he got the guy at the restaurant.
Paid him.
Gave him some money, put some beer in the back of the bus so we can have it when we get back.
I took two suitcases. One was empty, so he could fill up the other one with beer. And Charlie, it was fun. We had a good time. I see it was all for team union.
Well, that's the
union.
It always I don't know how to even get to the point of it articulately, other than that what you know is that this kind of crazy partying, a group of guys and gals, if they're working on a common project and they go out and party, there's a bond, not always, but there's a bond that develops.
Right.
That's not like we're just basketball players or we're working together. But hell, we had a good time together.
Not a bad thing. It was within the ranks. It was all because we cared for each other and because we enjoyed each other's company and we worked hard together. So it was a good thing.
And you produced on the court too. I mean, there might have been a little bit of a reaction from the coaches if they weren't ready to play, but they were always ready to play.
Yeah,
I mean, this guy was always ready to play regardless of what he had done the night before or the night after. So,
and that's the way I looked at it. And it didn't hurt anybody. That was the thing. So,
if you joined us late, I'm visiting with Larry Miller about the new book, Larry Miller Time, The Story of the Lost Legend Who Sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty, written by Steve Demarest, who's also with us. And Art Chansky, our friend Art Chansky, who knows everything about Carolina basketball, is here to keep us on track. So I hope that you'll stick with us and come back after we take a short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with one of the great Tar Heel basketball players of all time, who's been telling us how he got to Chapel Hill, some of the great games, some of the secrets of success, talking a little bit about Coach Smith. And I'm privileged to be joined by the author of the new book about Larry's whole experience. Larry Miller Time is the name of the book. The subtitle is The Story of the Lost Legend Who Sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. And also, thank goodness, Art Chansky, who knows a little bit about basketball, has joined us. And Art, during the break, we're talking about Coach Smith, the church, his ideas about church, and how they all came together when Larry Miller resisted that.
I grew up in the Northeast where pros are everything. College wasn't much. So all I had was just kind of images of what the college stars are all about. And some of the stories were good and some of them weren't, you know. But when I saw Larry Miller and I got to know him a little bit, I mean, he was everything good about a great college player. I mean, he wasn't cocky. I mean, he was kind of shy, I think, you know, very at home on the court. But he did, you know, he did have his ideals about certain things. And one of them was Dean always had my place have to go to church. You can pick your own church, but you have to go to church. You have to bring me the program from Sunday morning to prove that you went to church. Larry never went to church as a kid, and there was no reason why he had to when he came to Carolina, so I'll let you pick up the story from there.
Well, when I got here, Billy was the team leader as a senior. And
this is Billy
Cunningham. Yeah, I'm sorry. So we'd have to go to St. Thomas More, I believe it was. That's where our church was, church of choice, I guess. And
so this is where the Northeastern Catholic kids would go. Is
that, would be that church.
For people, just excuse me for interrupting you, Larry. I'm just sorry because I've got this image of you guys walking down Gimgul Road so you get to the church right before you get to Gimgul Castle. And it's not a giant – I mean, it's okay, but it's not a giant church. And now the Catholic Church in Chapel Hill goes on for football fields. They pack them in. It's just a big church. I didn't mean to get you off track.
No. But anyway, we used to have to bring a program back from church, a church program, just kind of like a football program or something like that, and turn it in. And I had Billy go down and get get mine for me. And then I'd turn it into Coach Smith. And I got to doing that for, I guess I did it my freshman year. And then finally, we had to do it again in my sophomore year. And I just finally went in there and told them, we had team player evaluations where we'd go in there and after about a month or two of the first year or whatever, go in there and sit down and talk to Coach Smith about our progress. And then I was talking to him too about my progress. And the thing about church, I brought it up myself. I said, by the way, I'm not going to bring you that program anymore from church. He said, why not? I said, because I'm not going to go. And I haven't been going. And I apologize. And then he didn't really get mad at me. He says, why not? I said, well, because I don't believe in it. I don't want to go to church. I wouldn't go to church. He said, well, what if you were at home and you would your parents put up with that? I said, of course they would. They know I don't believe in that situation, that certain situation. It wasn't about God or nothing, religion. It's just that I don't believe in this church. So I said, I wouldn't go at home, and I appreciated you not making me go here. And after that, we saw eye to eye on the subject.
That's a great story, Art. You're giggling. Is there more to the story?
Yeah, I mean, it's so Larry, and it's so Dean Smith, too, because you have to remember that Dean Smith, I mean, this was mid-1960s, so he was 35 years old. You don't think of Dean Smith as 35. He was learning. You know, he just came here as an assistant with Frank McGuire when he was in 29, and you get quite an education working for Frank McGuire to begin with, and, you know, Dean had his own way about certain things, but, you know, to not acknowledge that his players taught him a lot would be a mistake because his players taught him a lot.
And speaking of Frank McGuire, he came up and recruited me without a team. That was great. And he didn't want to talk to me. He wanted to talk to my mother. And he had two assistant coaches with him, Buck and
Donnie Wong. Sure.
Yeah. They came up to my house after school one day. He had just left the 76ers. He was driving a Cadillac. The three of them came up there. And I walked out to go up to the playgrounds to play. And he says, oh, hi, Larry. We're here to talk to your mother. Where's she at? She's in the house. Go ahead. Because I didn't want to talk to recruiters anyway. So they were recruiting me without a college. Well, I might be here, I might be there, and I might be here. So think about that.
So South Carolina was one, and then LaSalle was another?
Yeah, and South Carolina, LaSalle, and maybe another inner city.
that were the options for Frank. Well, you know, this is off the subject, but this is a subject that another great basketball player who was recruited by Frank McGuire when he didn't have a team.
Lenny Rosenblum. Yeah, and he said, I'm going to either North Carolina or Alabama.
Except that Lenny said, I'm going where you go.
Well, see, but apparently he knew he could get away with it. Apparently he did a good job there, right?
No, that's a whole new thing, and I wish we had him talking to us right now. It's so funny because when I went to vote last week, early voting, there he was, standing
Lenny.
In line to go
Lenny,
to vote.
Yeah.
Lenny was.
We were just talking about him a minute ago.
Well, let me tell you one other thing about the idea that when Larry Miller was here and Bobby Lewis was here and the freshmen. Now, in North Carolina, Rusty Clark was from Fayetteville. Bill Bunning was from New Bern. Joe Brown was from Valdez.
Yeah.
Gerald Tuttle was from Lexington, Kentucky. And Dickie Grubauer was a highly recruited guy from Schenectady, New York, coming down as a 6-foot point guard. So there was a lot of buzz about that team. But Larry Brown, who was the freshman coach, recognized exactly what it was. Usually when a freshman team comes in like that and they're going to turn a program around, they have the pressure. But Larry Brown said, oh, no. These guys are going to make it easier for Larry and Bobby because Larry and Bobby are going to be able to go back to their normal positions, their God-given positions. And all the freshmen have to be is supplemental players to these two great talents. And that's exactly the way it was. And that's why the freshmen came in not thinking that they were going to take over the team and be the stars of the team. Miller and the L&M boys, they call them, Larry, Lewis and Miller. They were the stars, and they recognized that. And I think that went a long way, Larry, into having that team chemistry take hold right off
Absolutely.
The bat.
Absolutely, yeah.
if you joined us late, I'm visiting with Larry Miller, and joining me, of course, is our own Art Chansky, and also Stephen Demarest is the author with Larry Miller of a brand new book, Larry Miller Time, The Story of the Lost Legend, Who Sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. And this is a great book. Stephen, this book is for sale in Chapel Hill now. And I think it's at the Bull's Head.
At the Bull's Head, at Flyleaf, at McIntyre's, out in Hillsboro, at Purple Crow, Scuppernong, so, out in all the independent bookstores.
The advantage of, I think those bookstores have, most of them have signed copies.
Yes.
Amazon, this is the great story I think about this book, Stephen, is that Amazon keeps running out of copies. They're selling it like crazy, and you know, they're in the business of marketing books, but the public is out ahead of them on that. So you can get, by now, Amazon, I think, has learned to be stocked up. So the book is really doing well, isn't it? Are you getting rich?
The best thing I wrote about that book was putting Larry Miller's name on the cover.
So. And his picture, too.
And his picture, yeah.
Well, it is about him. It's a great...
What's been a pleasure for me is seeing all these old boy fans coming out of the woodwork, and girls too, but, you know, 10-year-old boys, 14-year-old girls from yesteryear, and they're all, you know, pouring on to...
50-year-old girls too, right? In your household.
Ollie, sure.
Sure.
Well, they recognize the name, and they recognize, I think, that... the people who chronicle Carolina basketball over the years have done a good job in respecting the heritage and the history of it, because that's what Dean was all about. I mean, he always wanted you to know where this came from.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't like about what's going on in the world today, because people don't regard history like they used to, and they need to in order to be able to know what's going to happen in the future. They have to have an appreciation of history.
That's why the word time is in the cover, because it's not just about Larry Miller. It's about that time.
Exactly.
What high school ball meant back then.
And, yeah, I mean, it was a fabulous read. Congratulations
well,
so much.
Go out and buy it. That'd be the greatest thing. And four of us will be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about a brand new book called Larry Miller Time, The Story of the Lost Legend Who Sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. That book is written by Stephen Demarest with Larry's help. Stephen is here with us, and also Art Chansky is helping us mightily with their conversation with Larry. But Larry Miller, you're the star. I'd like to keep on talking about Tar Heel basketball, but one of the things that's always fascinated me is this ABA team that you played for, and you talk about it in the book, or you all talk about it in the book. But why in the world did you want to take a flyer with this brand new basketball league?
Well, first of all, I was kind of rebuffed by the NBA because it was a secretive time. It was a time when, you know, there was a lot of stuff behind the scenes going on, and for some reason they had a mock draft or a first round draft. It wasn't a full first round draft, and I wasn't picked in it. So,
Mad about that?
Or? I was offended by it because, you know, a lot of people were taken. I felt I was like a better player than.
Why do you think? Why is it size or is what was it?
It was either size or money. It was either size, or that they didn't feel like they wanted to pay me. You know, maybe if they drafted me that high, they'd have to pay me more or something like that. But, you know, they took some of the guys from the All-America team, but took a lot of guys from the ACC ahead of me. So anyway, I was kind of really put aside by that. And then when the NBA, the ABA had their kind of deal, they didn't have a real big draft or anything like that. But anyway, they took me, you know, first round pick.
Who came to talk to you about that?
No one really came to talk to me about it, but Dean handled my negotiations for me. Mm-hmm. And he got somebody from the law department to help. And when they made this offer, and then he had them put all the money in escrow, a 3-year deal, all the money was in escrow, a $5,000 bonus, which doesn't sound like much now, but back then it was a pretty good deal. And so I said, you know, I'm not going to wait for they didn't have their official draft yet. They had a mock draft, like I said. So they didn't have the real deal yet, but the NBA, that is. So I took the ABA's deal, and I was drafted by the Stars, and it was a pretty good, you know, young club.
Any regrets?
No, not at all. You can't change, you know, what happened in the past. And if I could, it wouldn't change my outlook on things. It is what it is, and it was what it was, because the first game we played, we were playing a gala event out there at the Los Angeles Arena, and we had a tent set up afterward and all that stuff. We played the first game. We were in the game with 3 minutes to go.
Who are you playing for now?
I was playing for the Stars. First game in the—
The first opening game for the whole league.
Well, the new reborn ABA was called.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was playing in that game. I can't tell you who we were playing, but we were in the game. Coming down to the wire, I'm playing kind of a swing forward. I've got like 27 points, maybe 13 rebounds, 7 assists or something like that. And it's like I say, about 2 or 3 minutes left to go. Coach pulls me out of the game, and I figure, well, he wants to tell me something, right? I don't get in the rest of the game. And this is my first pro game. This is after I played all these games down to the wire.
What's his story about why he's doing this?
I don't know. He thought, well, he wanted a shooter in there or a foul shooters in there or something like that. And I never did really sit down and talk to him about it, but that affected my whole career, because that's when I excelled, was at the end of a game. And for a player, you know, coming out of college the way I was, and for that to happen to me, that was, wow. You know, I was always we want him in the game, not out of the game. But apparently, you know, that's the way he coached. He wanted, like, certain players in certain positions.
Or you're being nice about it, because sometimes as coaches, they didn't want the players to get more publicity than they had. They didn't want the players' names.
Well, I didn't realize the pros were like that, but they had bigger egos than the players did in a lot of times. And, you know, they controlled it, so.
So then you had the little bit of an acting career. You had the belly dancing with Little Egypt, or was that her name, Little Egypt?
Little Egypt, yeah. That was in the Stars. That was a publicity.
With the Stars. Yeah. And then he had a great career with the Stars, and then he found himself, he wanted to come back to North Carolina.
Yeah, how
so
did
he
you
ended up with the
That's
Cougars.
Where Dancing with the Stars started out there.
You know, I would love to talk. I don't know anything about the California experience, but nevertheless, but the North Carolina, that was a great experiment with a team that played in – different arenas.
Venues.
Yeah.
There was another ego problem there with Bones, because he didn't like me because I got more publicity or something like that with him.
Well, you came from Carolina and he was a Wake Forest guy.
Something like that. It was very strange because when I first came or was traded to the Stars, which I asked to come back here, I wanted to play here because I love playing here. And then, you know, he just took that bad and you know, for some reason, the start of the second season, I felt like everything I said, I'm going to take everything as it was my fault when I go into training camp. So I came into training camp in incredible shape. I mean, I had a 40 pulse or something like that, not an ounce of fat on me. I could run all day long. And he told me at the start of that season, after that training and all that, he said, you know, I've never had a player work so hard to play so hard. It should start, but I can't start you, Larry. And that's the way the season went like that. So for some reason, I had that issue.
Well, Bones was a great character.
Oh, she was.
But a mixed bag as a coach, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're coming to the end. Art, you had one more question.
Yeah, I wanted, you know, you can't leave the show without Larry Miller still owns the all-time ABA single-game scoring record of 67 points with the Cougars, which will never be broken, of course, because there is no ABA anymore.
Right.
But he played with the red, white, and blue ball, and he played in a league with a shorter shot clock and a three-point line. So what an experiment. But talk a little bit about that game, and then the personal thing that happened a couple of days after.
Well, actually, before the game started, I was up in New York playing a game, and I was with some friends of mine. Saturday night, they visited me. We stayed up all night, and actually, I just caught the plane right from, you know, wherever I was. And I actually slept all day. Went into that game thinking I might not even play, you know, because I was kind of really tired.
This is such a great story, and we're going to tell that story, but we're not going to go off the air to tell it unless you'll come back sometime and tell this story.
Absolutely, come back.
Yeah. And I apologize to Archansky, you had this great story to wind up. If you did join us late, you really missed a great program as we chatted with Larry Miller about the new book, Larry Miller Time, the story of the last legend who sparked the Tar Heel Dynasty. That book by Steve Demarest is for sale all over Chapel Hill and all the bookstores. I want to thank Stephen for being with us, and especially want to thank Archansky for coming to help us and contribute his knowledge. And Larry, thank you so much.
What a great
pleasure for me to have this visit with you. Thanks to all of y'all for listening. This is D.G. Martin who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.